woman who, after more than 40 years in the same house, moves one year. And the very next year, her husband of more than 50 years dies. And then the very next year, she learns that she has cancer. And I'd like you just to pause for a moment and imagine if you heard that from a friend as a story about someone they know, what words would occur to you in your mind? What would you say or think? Well, I know what I would probably say. I'd probably say, "Oh, how awful." Or words to that effect, "Oh, poor woman." Actually, as most of you will have realised, the woman is me. And that's what's happened to me since 2015. And it's not awful. And that's what I'm here to try and tell you, show you, as best I can. Sometimes I run sort of thought experiments. They just run through my mind. And a recent one was, how would it be if you suddenly found it was all a mistake and you went back to before all this happened in my illness? And immediately the answer came, no, I wouldn't be without it for anything. Now that sounds really odd, doesn't it? But those are the words that rose up. I've learnt so much that I wouldn't be without it. Of course I experienced sorrow for the death of my husband Edward. And I'll say a little bit more about him as we go on. But I want to go back a little bit further to the first year after we'd moved, so that would be late 2015. I was at Adastana on a retreat, and my poor husband Edward was suffering. He was not well, he was becoming quite irrational. And I don't know if you've ever lived with someone you know very well who becomes irrational. It's frightening. I found it frightening anyway. So there I was in the shrine room at Adastana, feeling afraid of going home, which was next day. And I sat there and I recognised the fear and I just said, I'm not having this. I wasn't going to associate fear with my home. And sitting on, an image just rose up, which was of a boxy little house. My house is like a little box. There it was. And within it, there was a glowing golden red globe, a circle. And I knew that the house was the house of compassion. And that's what it became. When I went home, I just kept those words in mind and they were incredibly helpful to me and have remained so because at some point I realised I could include myself in the within the house of compassion. And those words sustained in that little vision. I don't know why words drop on me, they just do. I understand even less why images come. They just do. But they did sustain me for Edward's last 5 months greatly. And I saw very clearly during that time how suffering comes in the train of fear. It just happens almost automatically. Fear did crop up in this time, but it didn't stay long. And I suppose it has since then, in the time of my own illness, Not very much, but there have been some dark times which I'll mention. But this feeling, that this experience of the fear of feeling and just having it, ushering it out, strengthened my sense that feelings can be, are, in my experience, ephemeral. They're like cloud vapour, and I can see a big cumulus cloud and regard it as solid. They look rather solid, and they move along all in one piece until you look closely and realise they're dissolving as you look. And if you look back a few moments later, it's become some other shape, it's gone. And my sense of feeling is like that, feelings. They're real, they're sometimes extremely powerful, and they're ephemeral. So that was an unexpected gateway in my time that I'm talking about. There were several of these, that was one of them. And I think this paved the way for my next experience, which was of the fear of death, which is something I would regard as, or I did regard as, entirely normal and natural. Of course we fear death. But my goodness, has this been an unexpected gateway for me, because losing it was completely unexpected. I think a lot of things led up to this experience, and I can't really track all of them down, and I won't even try this evening, but you'll probably see as I go on some of them, some of the experiences, some of my practice that led up to this. But I was very surprised when this happened. I have no recipe for it. I wish I did have. I would give it to you. Because I think my most heartfelt wish now, there's nothing left I want to do. I'm happy to say I don't have what people inelegantly call a bucket list. I just don't have one of those. I don't wish to do anything in particular, except to try to tell people that fear can go. But I have no recipe. But I can tell you when this happened, very precisely. There I was in the colorectal ward at Addenbrookes in my first visit there, and I just had the first of four operations, and I thought, oh, the cancer's all gone, wonderful, and I was just kind of recovering from that. But you have quite a lot of scans, as some of you will know. And some of these revealed that I had cancer elsewhere too. When I was told this, it was as if death, which had been... You know, we all know we're going to die, don't we? In fact, when you think about it, it's one thing we can be absolutely sure of. I don't think I can be sure of anything else at all except that. And that's true for all of us, I think. And yet we might look there for a minute. I can talk of myself, you may be different, but I could look there for a moment. I could talk about, oh, of course I know I'm going to die. I'm not afraid of death, I might be afraid of dying. That's often what you say. But when I learnt I had cancer elsewhere, it was as if death came from the middle distance right up in front of my face. It was right there, inescapable. And I've just found myself looking directly into its face. And you wouldn't think that would lead to losing the fear of it, but it did. Or that was the occasion for it anyway. And I was very surprised, I must say. It took a while. I can't remember. I wasn't up to writing in a journal, so can't quite remember how long, but it wasn't terribly long. It didn't take very long for me to realise the fear had gone. How did I know that? I think I certainly experienced fear as a clenching tension about here, solar plexus area. You've probably all got your own spot for it. And it's quite unmistakable. And I found myself contemplating my death, and there was none of that. Just, it wasn't there. And it isn't there now as I talk of it. Nothing. So that's how I knew it had gone. I did have some dark times around that. I thought, I can't cope with more of this in multiple sites. But that too passed pretty quickly. You just, these things in, I think, a bit helped in hospital because there's so much difficulty going on around you. You just accept your own share of it, really. I can only speculate about why my fear of death left me. Here are a few ideas. Recognising that nothing could be done. I think that was very helpful, actually. The thought, this is really happening. There it was, right there. Because sometimes I felt that my day-to-day experience is actually, it's a bit dreaming. Sometimes I'm not in touch with what's really happening, or I used not to be. And I puzzled about that sometimes. I thought, what is this sense of dreaming? I didn't know, really. But I think maybe losing the fear of death can come when this is happening dawns on you. I think maybe it happened as my awareness was aligned with the way things really are in this aspect of reality. We all know we're going to die, but we don't quite look there. I didn't anyway. Not really, really. So that's why I feel, one reason why I feel this time has been of such benefit, that I've been brought face to face with this bit of the way things are. And the result for me has been not just losing fear, but the arising of great joy. And this puzzled me as well. When I came out of hospital for the first time, there I was sort of recovering at home and so on, learning how to manage with online ordering of food and all that stuff. I was really full of joy. And since that time, it settled into a sort of general cheerfulness. I've maybe not experienced the levels of bliss and joy that I did at first, but general cheerfulness will do, thank you very much, that's absolutely fine. So it may be something to do with losing a kind of grating against that aspect of the way things are. It brings great joy. And after all, looking things squarely in the face, difficulties and everything, that's part of our practice as Buddhists. So we've all had experience of doing that, maybe trying to do that and succeeding sometimes and not others, but being aware of this. And this is really the heart of what I want to... I was going to say give you, but I can't give it to you. I can share it with you or try and express it. I wish I could give you my experience, and I can't. I can just send news back from the front, as it were. Uncensored. No black crayons to block out the difficult bits. Yeah. heart of it is there's no need to fear dying and death. It's natural to do it, but there's no need, it's not necessary. And my big wish is that you all and everybody discovers that for themselves. Again, I can speculate about some of the causes of my cheerfulness, which, as I said, did puzzle me at first. It just arises. I don't make big efforts, and that's why it used to puzzle me. I don't feel puzzled. I've got used to it, really, but it puzzled me. And I think some things are both cause and consequence of it. I can't quite work out cause and effect, and I don't, you know, none of us needs to, really. It's simply there, and I'm very grateful. But I thought I'd tell you a bit about hospital experience. Some of you may have had it, others not. And I experienced it as bringing great blessings. I mean, you wouldn't exactly choose to spend time in Addenbrookes, and I've spent quite a lot of time in Addenbrookes. It was a month the first time. But this is one of the hidden jewels that I've discovered, is that being in hospital can bring great blessings, and here are some of them. There's a kind of thinning out of input. There I was, lying in bed with three other women around me, and you just see things passing the end of your bed because you're all, while you're in all with tubes and everything, that you don't move very much at first. So you just see things passing the end of the bed. And that's all there is to do, to observe these things. And I found that full of fruitful observation and reflection, sharpened my awareness generally. And what I saw briefly was great courage on the part of my fellow patients. Great courage. Great kindness on the part of my fellow patients and the staff. And I revere Addenbrookes. I've spoken with neighbours of mine who, in fact, I took one of them there. She broke her arm and I took her to A&E and she said, "Oh, I hate coming here." And she repeated that every time she had to go. Well, I actually love the place because of these experiences. I revere Addenbrookes. And also, it sharpened my awareness of pain in myself and others that's pretty well controlled, but also fear. I had a woman in the next bed to mine for a while who panicked. She knew she panicked, we talked about it, but when she felt pain rising, as she did in the night quite often, she would simply panic. And there were tears and great disturbance and upset. And I couldn't do anything much to relieve her of that. I used to take some lavender oil in the night. I don't suppose we were meant to do it, so I nipped across in the night and put lavender oil on my hands and just rubbed her hands, and that seemed to help her for a bit. It just distracted her, but there was nothing I could do. And I found that over and over again, and it was a bit frustrating, but it somehow brought the experience of others very keenly to me. I felt it very clearly, which may have fed my own or stimulated my own loss of fear. I don't know. Another thing I observed was people who knew quite well that they needed to feel in control, and there was huge anxiety when they couldn't be in control, and you very seldom are in control in hospital. very seldom. And another neighbour of mine got into a state of real fear because she wanted to see the anaesthetist the night before her operation, and the anaesthetist didn't turn up. Well, that very often happens. They're off doing an emergency somewhere. And I could see that this need to control events wasn't given ground here. She wanted to tell the anaesthetist all about this and the other, and she couldn't. And goodness, did that poor woman suffer. And none of it is necessary. If you just realise when things are beyond your own control, which in my opinion they mostly are, simply to observe that and acknowledge it clearly. But I think fear underlies these sufferings. This woman was afraid, and she thought she could allay her fear by controlling things. So I saw those things painfully clearly, really, and other things too. And I think the underlying fear underlies so much of our human experience that falls within the familiar to us, the poisons, the poison of clinging on to something because we think it's going to save us, give us security, the feeling of aversion. We don't want that, we'd rather it was like this. And simply not understanding clearly. Fear is bound up with all of those. I saw something else in myself too. I don't know about other people, but I saw it in me. And I really thought I'd got past this. So I was taken aback, catching myself doing it again. It was just so clear. Because of this thinning out of experience. I observed a consultant come in, and it's interesting to see there the way they enter a ward. It tells it's such a giveaway. And this one entered in, booming voice, a big entourage of people with computers and stuff coming in after him. And I have to say, I thought, oh, gosh, I'm glad he's not my surgeon. My surgeon was lovely. And he talked to his patient and exited smartly. And I thought, gosh, that man is brusque and not very pleasant. The next day, the self-same consultant came in and sat with his patient for a long time without his entourage, with no notes, just talking and listening so kindly and so patiently. Was that a bit of Freean apotropia for me? Yeah. So these kinds of lessons that we probably all had that one, they're just clarified in hospital. Can't escape them. Oh, I just want to add a word here so to try and clarify what I mean by being in control. Not letting that go, I don't mean to suggest it's giving in or giving up in any way. It's more a matter of letting go of desired outcomes. Something else that I've noticed from being in hospital, which is really hard to express, but I'll give it a quick go. And I've put this, all experience, all underlined, all experience is rich. And I've just experienced something that sounds quite shocking, really, that when you're surrounded by sorrow, by pain, and by the things that go with it that I've mentioned, the courage, the kindness, somehow all of it is together, and it's so rich that I found it beautiful. And that's not the usual way we use that word, but I can't find another. There's beauty in human life just passing before you, human existence. It's very hard to explain, but this talk could be about somewhat gloomy matters, but I'm trying to show that alongside the pain, the sorrow, the frustrations of not being able to take those away from people, there is so much that's joyful and wonderful and rich. I think this sense of beauty maybe comes from opening to experience of all kinds without reservation. Because when you're lying there in hospital with tubes and stuff in, you don't have any choice. You can't move, you can't go somewhere else, you can't switch on television. Well, you can, but it's difficult, not a good idea. There are no distractions, and somehow my awareness of human existence, it was all-encompassing, and there was a beauty there. Again, a bit of a qualification. I don't think one can necessarily open to these kinds of experience. Not to all experience at any one time. Conditions have to come together. It's not just something that... I don't want you to feel I'm recommending or advising these things to all of you. I'm really not. I feel extremely fortunate myself that I've experienced this. I'm just really fortunate. So a few more reflections I've had over the past 2 years, nearly 2 years of knowing I'm ill. I saw that there's no need to defend myself. Closing my eyes to some experience, wanting to manage events, changing them into something that I would feel happier with, more comfortable with, I prefer it this way rather than that way. I learnt in my time with the Dharma that happiness doesn't arise from getting what you imagine will make you happy. But there's something of that I think lingered in me. And that just got dispelled by my experience of being ill. And it's a great blessing that it's gone. Yeah. It's a great relief to let go of the sense that we need to defend ourselves against things we think will harm us, and change things into something we think will make us happy or benefit us. I don't think I know what will be a better experience. I used to think I did, but now I am sure I don't. Benefits and happiness arise out where you're not necessarily looking for them. There have been some dark times, I won't conceal that from you. I don't think you'd believe me if I tried to. I've had some dark times, but they haven't lasted very long. For a time, it hasn't happened lately, but for a time I was quite aware of having a thought that took my mental events sort of down in turn to something a bit darker. And then it was as if I had this somewhat irritating person sitting behind me who'd say quite perkily something very positive. And I found this a bit kind of irritating as well as puzzling, but it happened almost automatically. And actually, thank you very much, whoever it was sitting there. Helpful. And I was thinking of it this evening and realizing I haven't noticed that lately, and maybe my thoughts are... They sometimes take a bit of a dip, but it doesn't last very long at all. So thank you, positive, if rather irritating, voice. Thank you, I'm grateful. Yeah. My husband's last months were... He was suffering. He was becoming irrational, as I mentioned. He was declining. And in that time, I witnessed in my mental events, as soon as self-concern crept in any shape, my mental tone would descend and I'd just get less happy, unhappier. And it happened just as the night follows the day. It was just automatic. I saw it happening. And that's a very useful thing to me, that self-concern does not bring happiness. And I've retained this particular learning about self-concern in this time of having cancer. To me, having cancer, which is now inoperable, and I've refused the chance to have more chemotherapy, I was looking carefully at the oncologist who'd given me a fortnight to think about it. It didn't take very long, because I'd foreseen this moment coming. I was looking at her face very carefully, and she looked amazed for a minute. So I thought, oh, maybe not many people do refuse. And a friend of mine... medical friend of mine said, oh yes, most people do accept it, and the people who don't are the medical staff. So I thought that was quite interesting. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I've done. It wasn't a hard decision. And I don't find having cancer particularly awful. Many of us have it. I was going to die anyway. It'd be different if I was young, with young children. I'm a completely different picture, but I'm 75. My sons are approaching 50. It's fine. Three words came to me after Edward died. I'd had the grieving going on, and three words dropped on me different times, day after day. One was normal, one was natural, and the third was ordinary. And I applied these to Edward's death, any death, and I apply it to my own illness. That's what it is. For many of us it's normal, and for all of us the fact of death is normal, natural, and ordinary. Imagine what it'd be like if we didn't die. I mean, just picture it. We'd all drop off the planet. We'd be so crowded. So I find that very helpful, that I don't catastrophize, to use a rather unpleasant word, but it fits. I don't catastrophize my situation remotely. There's no need to. Another thing which will be very familiar to all of you, that I found very helpful from the beginning of all this is staying in the moment. Extremely helpful. If my mind strays to past events, and I sort of look back, as I did when I began with that story of the woman and her events, one after the other, if I stray back to that and dwell in it, I can think, oh, goodness, that was awful. Or when I had to do such and such in recovering from an operation, that was awful. It doesn't actually penetrate very far now I say it, but certainly used to. So I would say to myself, look, it's gone, it's past. No, there's absolutely no point in mulling that over, unless it's things that you can learn from. No point at all. The future is unknown, apart from a few basic facts. I don't know how long I've got exactly. I've been given a prognosis, which is months, not years. But beyond that, who can tell? I think prognoses, I've only asked once, really, because I know it's not an exact science. But when I did ask quite recently, that's the reply I got. Who knows when. So again, there's very little point thinking about the future. Staying right here in the present, wonderful. Other things I've found helpful, but I'm sure you have experienced them. I won't go into them. But I will end with a couple of experiences I'm profoundly grateful for. They've come to me in the form of words. Actually, that's what tends to happen. There was a time when I found the word courage coming into my mind quite often, and it would sort of rotate in my mind. And then one morning I woke up and suddenly the words dropped on me, bottomless well. Why bottomless well? And then I found myself putting them together. Courage is a bottomless well. And I can give you that. It's been tremendously helpful at times of difficulty when I felt some aversion to the ongoing current experience. Or in the morning, I might wake up and not feel too good and, oh dear, I've got to get up. So, courage is a bottomless well. Takes that tension away immediately because I know that I can draw on it forever. It's not going to dry up. And you too will find that, I trust, if you don't already know it. And the other experience came from one of these dark times when I found myself saying, what is the point? I think I was in hospital at the time. What's the point? And the subtext was of going on with all this cancer all over the place. And immediately the answer came, the Dharma. Immediately. And I didn't understand what it meant in that context. And it's dawned on me quite gradually and quite recently that what it means to me is I've got time to talk to people who want to listen about the loss of the fear of death and the joy and cheerfulness which I experience. I've got time to talk to people about it. I've got time to talk to you tonight. Sometimes, I'm sure I've said it myself, somebody tells you that their husband just came in from the garden and they went to get them a cup of tea and they were just died in their chair. And I'm sure I've said, oh, what a wonderful way to go. Well, not for me and not at this time. It's been wonderful to have time to experience what I've experienced, learn what I've learned, and still more learning ahead, and to be able to try to share it. What I've learned is wonderful, and I wouldn't have it any different.
Has very kindly offered to answer questions. If anyone has any questions, she said she's very happy to answer questions. So if you have any questions, anything you want to ask about?
That remark usually makes my mind go blank. Yes. So if you haven't, don't worry about it.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your experience with us. Been great to listen to you. I wanted to ask a question from your point of view. Why do you think we see, at least for me, I tend to see death like something, I'm very well aware that the existence is there for everyone, but you always like it's difficult to feel that it's something's going to happen to me.
Yes, I think
Damotra, just for the sake of the camera, could you repeat the question?
Right, my member of the audience over there asked why I think we don't want to think about something happening to us. We fear death. We don't want to look there too closely. And I began early on by saying it to me it's natural that we should. And I think it's something to do with, well, Lord, maybe everything to do with our sense of having a self. Here we are. This is me. And this self needs defending. It's threatened by all sorts of things out there. And I've got to defend it. And if you like, death is the ultimate threat from out there. So I know I can't ultimately defend myself against death, but I defend myself along the way by just not quite looking it squarely in the face. I don't know if that meets what you had in mind.
I feel your comment about it's something to do with the self. Something is especially that we see this, we feel the self as something that is fixed. So because we have that self, it gives that subconscious idea that it's always going to be there. So it's difficult to realize that it will not always be there.
Indeed. So I think losing the fear of death is not something to be done just like that. It's something that happens after a lot of life experience, not necessarily Buddhist practice, but a lot of experience and reflection. Yeah, but Buddhist practice particularly helpful in this area. Mm.
Damotra,
hello.
Thank you very much for your talk. I'll try to. I've got a very quiet voice. I'll try hard to speak up. I notice in myself a tendency to put things off, thinking, oh, I'll deal with that at a later point in time. And I just wondered, would you have any particular recommendations or encouragements, that to deal with now in order to come to a greater peace of mind?
Hmm. Well, you're talking. Oh, Jinmati asks about have I got any hints about how to avoid putting things off and be in the now? Well, you're talking to a great procrastinator. Years, decades of procrastination. Yeah. And sometimes, actually, it turns out rather well, which undermines one's right intentions here. Now, don't take that as a recommendation. Well, in the context of what I've been talking about, I feel it was that confrontation with, in this case, death, that no more procrastination. Here it is. But if circumstances don't happen like that, gosh, it's really difficult. I suppose one thing I did, you know, did spur me on a bit was having a good look at the discomfort that comes from procrastination. Because you know it's there, you've got this thing to do, and it doesn't just disappear, it's niggling away there. And looking at that discomfort is a spur to action for me. But sorry, I haven't got much magic there for you. Yeah, it's looking at the consequences, that's I think what I found most helpful.
You have to speak up, Alison, but that can't be.
This overcoming the fear of death, does that go hand in hand with overcoming the fear of the physical pain? Or is that a separate thing?
That's a really good question. Alison's asked whether the fear of death and the fear of pain go hand in hand, and does the loss of them go hand in hand? I think, broadly speaking, they can do. I don't know for anyone else. I can just speak from my own experience. But I think, yes, I haven't said much about pain, really. I mean, for us in this day, we're very fortunate and it can be controlled. But sometimes... it isn't in hospital. Sometimes my epidural after one operation, it just didn't work, and I came to in high intensity, a high dependency, with unbelievable levels of pain. And I came to and I passed out three times. And again, I didn't really experience fear. I just experienced the pain. I wasn't afraid. But that experience of extreme levels of pain, which I know were extreme because they write you a letter. Well, they write a letter to your GP, actually. And because of data protection, you get a copy now, for those of you who don't know about this. And the letter is very, very detailed. It tells the GP everything that's been done, and I don't always follow their technical language, but the words high levels of pain were in there, so I know it was. And I don't fear pain in the future because I know I've passed through that, if you see what I mean. And I know that one passes through it. But it's a bit more than that. I'm trying to get at the more. I think it's to do with something I kind of touched on earlier that's very difficult to express, which is a sense of one's own insubstantiality. You know, sometimes I feel as if it's a rather lovely feeling that I can just let the wind blow through me, that I'm not sort of setting up something that the wind hits and goes off somewhere else. It passes right through. And I think that relative insubstantiality of the self helps with fear of pain. Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I ought to say here that I'm very wary of saying never again am I going to experience fear, pain. pain, a fear of pain. I haven't experienced it over some time, but it doesn't mean to say it won't arise in the future. So all I say is simply as my experience currently is and has been. Yeah. There's a general sort of relaxation when you lose the defensiveness, when you lose that sense of substance that needs protecting. So I think fear of pain is going to be something else that diminishes due to that, probably. But I'm not a pain expert. We need Vidyamala here, really, to say a bit more about it, or people trained in pain management, like some of you. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question? Do you have any sort of clear sense of what may happen next for you?
No. I've read the useful little booklets put out by Macmillan. And they are very helpful, and they give you some idea. And they give you an idea of the care that you may well have. So I've got some sense of what's going to happen, but when it's going to happen, I've absolutely no idea. And the palliative care consultant I saw a few weeks ago said, I asked something about this, and she said, oh, you'll know inside yourself. The image I've got is of myself as a large passenger aircraft full of people off to San Francisco or somewhere nice. And here we are at Heathrow, and we're taxiing round the perimeter, lots and lots of runways, round and round, because we're having to wait our turn. And I'm taxiing around the runways. I haven't got to the point where I've got to the top of the runway, that exciting moment when everything revs up and then you feel the G-forces a little bit. I haven't got there yet. I'm still taxiing around. But this doctor seemed to think I would know. Somebody else said something helpful, that when changes in fatigue, pain levels, and what's the third thing? Loss of appetite. When you start to notice those changing over weeks rather than months, then you can measure your time in weeks rather than months. And I thought, oh yeah, it's obvious really. But no, I'd say I'm in the months at the moment, yeah. But no, I don't know. And if you're asking me more esoterically, if I know, do I have views about the Bardo, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, forgive me if you aren't, or multiple rebirths, I've got absolutely no idea.
Cross the bridge when you get there.
I'm sorry?
Cross the bridge when you get there.
I'm sorry, could you
say... Cross the bridge when you get there.
Yeah, well, yes. If there's a bridge, I still like my image of the jet.
Yeah. Hi, Dharmendra. It's really nice your sort of lightness in terms of relaxation. And I was interested about, you talk about a sort of sense of richness in your experience. You haven't said anything about poignancy, and I don't know if I'm just sounding a bit naive or something, but I wonder if that is, those two things are connected, whether that's sort of a live view or...
Very much so. Thank you for that word. It's a really good word, poignancy. This was a question about whether richness, that I tried to describe as richness in my experience, contained or included poignancy. And yeah, very much so. That's part of it. And poignancy is an odd experience because it's not an experience I would push away, and yet you can't say it's joyful. it falls outside those two categories altogether. And I would think, yes, that's very much part of my sense of huge richness. Everything is in there. Yes. Thank you.
Perhaps that's enough, is it? Any other questions before we... No? Okay. Well, let's just finish by thanking Damodara again.
Thank you.